Hi, everyone. It's Brian Kilmeade here. Are you tired of those uncomfortable dress shirts, especially when they bunch up under a sweater? If so, then you must check out Collars & Co., makers of the Dress Collar Polo. Listen up. These shirts are four-way stretch, buttery soft polos with firm dress collars on them, so they give you the dress shirt look, but extremely comfortable polo feel. You can wear them with anything, under a sweater, with a blazer, or by themselves as an elevated polo. They work for any occasion. These polos are perfect, whether it's in the office, on a golf course or a night out. Collars & Co. is exploding and have gone viral on social media thanks to the $1 million investment they received on Shark Tank from Mark Cuban and Peter Jones. You don't have to worry about collars that flop down and spread out. They stay firm and sharp all day. It's an amazing array of sweaters, quarter zips, pants, and outerwear. If you're looking for the performance dress shirt or polo that looks great all day, check out collarsandco.com. Use promo code Brian for 15% off of any purchase of $100 or more. That's promo code Brian.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Everyone, so glad you're there. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show, and we have a big hour coming your way. I know most of you are buried in snow. I'm not going to talk about the weather. You know enough about it. If you're experiencing it, you don't need me explaining it to you. If you're not experiencing it, you don't want to talk about it. Senator Mark Wayne Mullen is going to be with us today, Armed Services and Appropriations Committee. I know Oklahoma has really got hit hard. They're not necessarily used to it, so I understand the focus, but there's so much going on around the country, and there's a lot going on today. I know the President of the United States is going to be meeting, talking about the Trump accounts, and he's got a whole big agenda moving forward. But if you care about the election, either way, Democratic or Republican, you got to fix what's going on with these illegal immigrants and what's happening in these major cities, especially these left-wing cities who live to create havoc for Donald Trump. And now it's caused the death of at least two Americans. Let's get to the big three.
Number three.
And so the death toll you're hearing about, the lowest number confirmed by Reuters and others, is around 5,100. The number you heard from a human rights organization yesterday was 43,000, and Iranians in the streets are saying 70-plus thousand.
Pretty amazing, right? Can you believe this? Iran protest deaths, not two, more like 30,000. The Ayatollah has gone into hiding, and the U.S. moves an armada into the Persian Gulf. Are we about to hit the evil empire first, once and for all, and save the Iranian people? Let's talk about it.
Number two.
It has taken down five people within the seven-person governing body that essentially makes the top military decisions. Five of them. The only ones who are left, Xi Jinping himself and one other uniformed general. So it just says so much about the concentration of power.
Can you believe this? Major upheaval in China. China's massive firing of their elite generals, along with the accusation of one giving us, the U.S., nuclear secrets. This is superpower in crisis, yet Canada and some EU nations seem eager to get to economic bed with them.
Number one.
And I think that President Trump is already signaling that he knows that something that is not sustainable has to be changed. And he did an interview last night with the Wall Street Journal, Josh Dossi. I think he talked to a few other people, and he's seeding the ground to say, okay, maybe we're going to make some changes here. So I think that that is more than likely going to happen.
That is Dana Perino with Fox and Friends moments ago. Another fatal shooting in Minneapolis, and there is national outrage as we wait for the investigation. Yet the victim was armed. We know that, but the question is, was he about to shoot anyone? Doesn't seem so. Time for Tom Homan to take the operation over, and he's done it. The President of the United States just put on Truth Social as I walked up here that Tom Homan will go to Minneapolis, and I believe one of the first things he will do is meet with the mayor and governor. And I think he's going to be an arbiter. And then people say, well, Brian, he's just another Trump guy. No, he's not. Tom Homan's about law enforcement. Just so happens that him and Donald Trump agree the border needs to be sealed and illegal immigrants need to be scooped up according to law. But worst first, and now he's been totally left out of what's happening in Minneapolis. You notice he's not been appearing anywhere because he can't sign off on it. Now, this is fundamentally, in my view, the reason why there's so much unrest is this is exactly what the mayor and governor want. A distraction from their scandal with fraud, number one. Number two, this is the way they handle things. These are socialist guys. These are guys that love, do not like cops, and they think the criminals are getting a raw deal. And now illegal immigrants, he calls them their people. They're not their people. Illegal immigrant criminals. You leave them in your jail. You prevent ICE from getting them. You don't allow your 600 cops to help out the ICE or Border Patrol or FBI that are going through your city. Therefore, the perimeter is left wide open. Therefore, when they walk around, they communicate through Signal and through these different apps to find out exactly where ICE is staying, where they're working, who they're targeting, and they make life miserable. They fundamentally are the problem. Remember, there's no problem in Memphis, no problem in Washington, no problem in New Orleans. A little bit of consternation in Chicago. I got it. More sanctuary city, more hostile leaders. Here is Jacob Frey. Cut four.
That is not what we are talking about right now. What they are also saying is that this is simply political retaliation. They are saying this is political retribution, and it's focused here on a blue city in a blue state. That's not how America works. Other countries function that way. We don't.
Okay, a couple of you clown. If you really wanted to function, blue or red, it doesn't matter. If you really wanted to get illegal immigrants the worst first, you would allow cops to interact. You would allow your prisons to be open. And if you want to push back against law enforcement, the main thing that Jacob Frey should be doing as mayor, they're about 200 cops short of where they were in many before the George Floyd riots. They can't get anybody back there. Nobody wants to do it. So now we got a push and pull, and we have this explosive situation where you got thousands of Minneapolis residents walking the streets, many of which are getting paid, just creating chaos, making ICE and Border Patrol the bad guys. Listen to the irresponsible Governor Tim Walz. Cut five.
This is an inflection point, America. If we cannot all agree that the smearing of an American citizen and besmirching everything they stood for and asking us not to believe what we saw, I don't know what else to tell you.
There's going to be an investigation into how he died and, you know, what went into it. And we see a lot of different tapes, a lot of different angles, but I'm not a professional investigator, are you? So why not wait? So you have this guy who is a male nurse in the emergency room, but he's a big time ICE hawk. He was trying to stop these guys wherever they went, wherever ICE went, where Border Patrol went. When he had free time, that's what he was doing, along with thousands of others. He did bring a gun. We know that for sure. And what happened after that, what led to it, the dialogue back and forth should come out in an investigation that people trust. And it should not overshadow the incredible work the president's done. Over 600,000 illegal immigrants have been sent out. Over 2 million people have taken the opportunity to leave on their own and take the $2,500 in many cases. And others sat there and be protected by their own community. They pretend as if they're walking around scooping up anybody. That's not happening. But they could use a mission focus. I was struck by what Bill Malusian said in his reporting. As you know, he works for us, and he's got great context at the border. He wrote this. There's frustration and anger with the DHS messaging after this deadly shooting. This is coming from other Border Patrol and ICE members. Specifically, he says, there's an internal frustration with the DHS going on television and putting out statements to describe Alex Preedy as a domestic terrorist who is there to inflict maximum damage. These sources say this has been catastrophic from a PR and morale perspective, and it's eroding trust and credibility, comparing it to when Democrats falsely claimed that the border was closed and that Haitians were being whipped at the border. Those were true, and they believe that when you tell people the things that they're seeing is not what they're seeing, that's a problem for everybody, especially when you believe in your mission. Here's Steve Scully's Cut 11.
Well, that's because they didn't get resistance in cities like New Orleans, where, you know, when you look in Minneapolis, and I just listened to the chief, and you could hear him lamenting four times, I think he said, that they're strapped so thin. And let's keep in mind, Minneapolis is a city that defunded their police. That's not the chief's fault. That's the failed Democrat leader's fault. But at the same time, when they defund the police, that leaves the chief stretched thin. And so
he was talking
they've
about
made
the
a decision
response.
Not to assist ICE.
So they were saying that's the big difference. That's why there was no problem in New Orleans, run by a Democratic mayor, but run by a Republican governor. So I'll talk more about that. So what's it going to mean? So that means that Chuck Schumer, desperate to keep his job and fend off a primary from AOC, is acting like a tough guy every chance he gets. And now he's making statements that he's going to not fund. He's not going to fund the government, DHS. He's supposed to sign off on it. Regular appropriations bills went actually through the normal appropriations process. The House delivered all 12 appropriations bills. The Senate's about to sign off on them. And now they might stop and not fund DHS, which is fun through 2029 because President Trump did it already in the big, beautiful bill. So don't act like you're going to be able to stop it. But that's what they're doing. Here's Senator Adam Schiff, cut 14.
Well, I'm not giving ICE or Border Patrol another dime, given how these agencies are operating. Democrats are not going to fund that. The government will shut down if Republicans insist that be joined with other government funding. It will be a Republican decision. They understand we're not going to go along with this. And we hope some of the Republicans in the Senate may see those scenes in the streets and be as repelled as we are.
All right, that is Senator Adam Schiff, acting irresponsible. So let's shut down the government, not pay people, send people home without paychecks, let them be late on their rent, especially while buried in ICE. Go ahead. Good luck. You have the weirdest, oddest way of getting angry. You show your anger towards Republicans by hurting people who work for the government. Good job. Now, you hurt the economy last time, so you benefited from that. But most people understand that you held out funding the government for health care subsidies, which you still haven't gotten. And a lot of people really were hurting because of that. A lot of people never came back to work because of that. So I'll take a time out. We come back at the bottom of the hour, Senator Mark Wayne Mullen. I'll be able to squeeze in some calls, talk more about what's happening in Minneapolis. Also, there's things going on overseas I've never seen before. Massive general fire, including the most powerful general in the Chinese army. Wow. Leaking to the Americans. That's us. Wow. We'll talk about that. And the president seems to be moving on Iran. We'll talk about that. Don't move.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
20 days, one historic move, an unbelievable journey. Melania from the Amazon MGM Studios captures the one-of-a-kind transition into the White House, showcasing the planning, the pressure, and personal moments that come with stepping into the role of the First Lady for a second time. From logistical complexities to decisions made behind closed doors, the film brings you closer to Mrs. Trump and her family as they return to the nation's capital. See what history looks like before the doors officially open. Melania arrives exclusively in theaters January 30th, 2026.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
President Trump was asked about it January 13th. He said, I really don't care in terms of renewing it. There's no real advantage. We don't need Canada products here. Is that free trade deal doomed?
No, it is not doomed. That is my view. All three countries, Canada, the U.S., and Mexico, did broad consultations, national consultations with their business communities in particular on how that agreement works for them. And really, without exception, the American comments back were, sure, we'd like to maybe update this or change this a little bit. Mm-hmm. But job number one is to do no harm to this agreement, which is the economic foundation of our continental partnership and leads to very important U.S. competitiveness and Canadian and Mexican competitiveness vis-a-vis other parts of this world.
I mean, no one has to tell you that we have a bit of a fissure with Canada. Trudeau and Trump never got along. And now this other guy is just a clown, globalist, liberal guy who feels as though he wants to up his approval rating by taking on the U.S. So the USMCA is supposed to be renegotiated by law, but it was supposed to last 5 years. This summer, find out what's working for Mexico, U.S., and Canada, make some changes to it, negotiate. Should have been relatively quick. But Carney, the prime minister, has no plans, they said, to pressure to go for a free trade agreement with China. But he did come in and he is allowing the decrease of tariffs when it comes to China's electric car, which is done under ridiculous labor laws. It's going to destroy any electric car that could be made. It already surpassed Tesla. I'm for free market, but there's nothing free market about what China produces. So now they're going to let them in. Scott Bessent also criticized the trade talks between Ottawa and Beijing, warning that against any kind of free trade pact. He said, quote, Bessent said that he's not sure what Prime Minister Carney is doing there other than trying to virtue signal to the globalist friends at Davos ahead of the USMCA renegotiation. So what is the world doing? They're acting like tough guys, but do they have any power? We watch their butt. They pay 1.4% of their smaller GDP into military. We provide their nuclear umbrella. We pay for almost all of their weapons. So I think the president says, step up and take charge. So they want to come back and say, we got some pride. We're going to start doing deals with China. Good luck with that. You're going to be, you said that we're pushing back against autocrats and you choose China? Cut 21.
We can't let Canada become an opening that the Chinese pour their cheap goods into the U.S. We have a USMCA agreement, but based on that, which is going to be renegotiated this summer, and I'm not sure what Prime Minister Carney is doing here, other than trying to virtue signal to his globalist friends at Davos, I don't think he's doing the best job for the Canadian people.
You wouldn't think so. So, you know, it all came down to some of the fallout with Greenland and the deal that we're going to cut. It looks like as we expand our bases, we'll basically own the land we're expanding, and then we're going to get a great deal on rare earth. I don't see any problem with any of that. They also brought up, too, to keep in mind, if we're concerned about the Arctic Circle, we got to start building up, and we are, we got to start building up the Alaska military bases, which are great, but we've got to build them up more because it's all about the Bering Strait. Now, if you want to know the truth behind Greenland, the $600 billion that they write to Greenland, does Denmark every single year. Carla Sands has got a great perspective. She was ambassador to Denmark during Trump's first term. Cut 23.
In 2019, when President Trump told the current prime minister, you need to do more to get Greenland secure, she said she would. She said she would invest $200 million into Greenland security. But she actually only invested 1%, $2 million, and it wasn't even into security. It was a kind of education effort. So she didn't keep her word. Denmark has no interest in securing Greenland. They can't afford to. It's all they can do to send that welfare transfer every year of about $600 million. So President Trump is right. Greenland is unsecure today.
Yeah, and the thing is, they're going to put new focus on it. And personally, I didn't think we want to write a $900 billion check to buy it anyway, knowing the president. So he just said, well, secure it. I think it's going to be a good deal. I don't see it being brought up a lot. I think he's going to focus on getting Venezuela up and running, getting that oil gap. They're going to let out another 100 prisoners out of jail, political prisoners out of jail. And I think the president's going to be focusing, when it comes to foreign policy, on Iran. Two senior Iranian officials separately told Time magazine last week that 30,000 people may have been killed between January 8th and 9th, that the Ayatollah told them basically open up fire on everything, anything, as much force as you need to restore order to our country. Just start shooting. Now, the anti-regime media claimed on the 24th that Khomeini was moved into an underground shelter in the Tehran province. Sources add that if Khomeini's third son, Masoud, had assumed day-to-day oversight of the leader. Now, we'll see where this goes, because Trump already promised, told these guys to rise up, stand up, and keep fighting, that I basically got your back. Now Iran must have known that the USS Abraham Lincoln carrier group has now arrived right in theater. It has been brought up by Jennifer Griffin that the Iranians have drone swarms that might be able to do some damage to an aircraft carrier. But I'm sure we thought about all this ahead of time. And I think that Iran knows its days are numbered. So we're going to see what happens. The worry I have is that the Ayatollah gets tossed at 86. He's going to die soon anyway, hopefully. But I worry the Iranian Revolutionary Guard's going to take over. There could be just another military dictatorship in the region. So that doesn't make me feel good about what you got to always think about what comes next. So we'll talk about that when we come back. Senator Mark Wayne Mullen on both those things. Also on the possible of a government shutdown, as the Democrats are incensed about another shooting in Minneapolis and say they're not going to fund the DHS. Meanwhile, the big, beautiful bill funds it until 2029. So what do you talk about, Adam Schiff, Angus King, Chuck Schumer? We'll talk to Mark Wayne Mullen about that. You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. And don't forget, go to BrianKilmeade.com. Get tickets to see me in Fort Myers, Florida. History, Liberty, and Laughs. February 14th.
This is Ainsley Earhart. Thank you for joining me for the 52-episode podcast series, The Life of Jesus.
A listening experience that will provide hope, comfort, and understanding of the greatest story ever told. Listen and follow now at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I hate shutdowns. I'm one of the people that helped negotiate the solution to the end of the last shutdown. But I can't vote for a bill that includes ICE funding under these circumstances. What they're doing in my state, what we saw yesterday in Minneapolis. There's an easy way out, by the way. Leader Thune could separate, which is what they did in the House, separate the five other appropriation bills, put them on the floor. They would pass, I think, overwhelmingly. Then let's take up DHS. And by the way, if those bills pass, 96% of the federal government is funded. Yeah. Take up DHS by itself. Let's have an honest negotiation, put some guardrails on what's going on, some accountability, and that would solve this problem. We don't have to have a shutdown.
All right, Senator Angus King weighing in, Chuck Schumer taking the lead. They're going to defund DHS as if less funding is going to be great. Meanwhile, the big, beautiful bill funded up to 2029. Senator Mark Wayne Mullen joins us now. Senator, in the wake of the Minneapolis shooting, now Democrats are maneuvering to shut down the government again. Are you to believe that?
Well, they were maneuvering to shut down the government before that. The truth is, it's just another excuse because they were really interested in having reforms and accountability to DHS. Part of the DHS funding that we've been working extremely hard to work in a bipartisan manner included $20 million for every ICE agent to have a body camera on. You're talking about accountability. There you go. That's the best accountability you can have. When you start talking about reforms into DHS, okay, well, what is it that you're wanting? It's more than just saying you're going to vote no. What is it that you're wanting? Because there hasn't been a problem with DHS in any red states, any red cities where they actually have cooperation from local law enforcement or from the state and from the city mayor. There hasn't been any incidences like this. There hasn't been any shootings. There hasn't been violence and protests and riots. This is happening in blue cities and in blue states where you have no cooperation with DHS from, by the way, doing their job, and you have no issues with rioting going on in the streets. It's poor leadership and rhetoric that's coming out of the left that's causing these problems to begin with. But listen, it's an excuse, Brian, for them to simply vote no on a piece of legislation that would fund the government.
I want you to hear AOC cut 8.
If we do not do something now, I do not know what can happen afterwards. We have to contain this chaos. This administration is declaring an openness and a justification for violence against American citizens based on their organizing, based on their political affiliation, and they are using the guise of DHS to do it. We have to draw a line in the sand now across sectors, politically, economically, in our media, and more.
Do you hear that among other Democrats, or is she out there on a left-wing island?
No, you're hearing this same rhetoric. Do something. What is something? You're talking about rhetoric and organizing. Isn't that exactly what the Democrats are doing? They're putting out rhetoric, basically saying that – I'm not basically saying, Brian. They're saying that they need to arm themselves. They need to fight. I mean, you had the AG out of Arizona, leftist Democrat that was elected, that said that the stand-the-ground rules would apply to shooting ICE agents. Really? You have Governor Waltz, who's been out there saying that they have been occupied by an illegal force and that they need to fight against them. That's rhetoric. When you start seeing organizations that are being paid to go out there and protest and obstruct law enforcement from doing their lawful job, that is exactly what the left is doing. Why AOC is accusing the right of doing that? I don't get it. But once again, it's rhetoric. that they are saying for an excuse to vote no and fight something against President Trump because they're Trump derangement.
So this is what Barack Obama said. People across the country have been outraged by the spectacle of masked ICE recruits. Believe this? He said masked ICE recruits. He knows why they're wearing masks, but he still does it. And other federal agents acting with impunity and engaging in tactics that seem designated to intimidate, harass, and provoke and endanger the residents of a major city. ICE needs to leave the state. So this guy who knows what ICE is against, knows their approach, knows their training, says masked ICE recruits. I mean, and he doesn't cite at all the mayor and governor for playing a role. So much for being, you know, in the post-presidency, being a guiding force or a calming force.
Well, Barack Obama could have united the country if he chose to actually tell his true story, except he incited more racism than our country had seen in decades. He had an opportunity to actually share what being an American's all about, where you can pull yourself up from absolutely nothing and become the president of the United States. He chose to take a different path. And since he's been out of the White House, he has continued to weigh in, not showing his love for America, but showing his loyalty to what? To the Democrat Party. And it's shameful that you see this. I mean, I know you hear it from Hillary Clinton, rhetoric like this, but Hillary Clinton was never elected to presidency. But you don't hear it from Bill Clinton. You didn't even hear this kind of rhetoric from Jimmy Carter. You definitely don't hear it. You definitely didn't hear it from either one of the Bushes. Because why? When they get out, they understand the decisions that the president of the United States has to make. But Barack Obama can't help himself because it's about the Democrat Party, not about America.
But James Cohen, how do you feel, Senator, about what should be next? Because I saw the president of the United States put on Truth Social. He's sending Tom Homan out there. He's going to take over the Minneapolis situation and report directly to the president. Are you in support of that? And have you also noticed the friction between the DHS, Tom Homan, and specifically Kristi Noem, where they don't even speak to each other?
Well, I don't know if they necessarily don't speak to each other through friction. They just are running in different lanes. DHS is a huge organization that has to, that, I mean, they deal with a lot more than just electing or arresting illegals inside our cities and states. There's a lot of international work that's been done. I see that Kristi Noem and Tom Homan has kind of split some responsibilities. Of course, there's always different ideas. When you have two strong personalities and two leaders in one place, they may have different opinions, but they're still fighting.
Would
for
you
the
like
same
this move?
Illegals out.
Do you like this move?
You know, I'm not making a decision. President Trump is making a decision, and I think Tom can go in there and help with messaging. I don't know if he's going to be actually leading and organizing what's going on on the ground. But as far as messaging and getting out there in front of it, I believe Tom will be a good person for it.
So, you know, Bill Malusian, you know how great he does on the border, how great his connections are. He's reporting that there's real people are really upset by the way, I guess, leadership has been characterizing this latest shooting and everything on down. They say the morale is extremely low because of it. And he's saying that it's really PR 101 and they're losing the message. They're proud of what they're doing. But between Border Patrol and DHS and the leadership that's speaking out, it's making the people that work underneath them very uncomfortable. Have you heard that?
I haven't heard that, but it appears to me that leadership in DHS has their officers back, which is exactly what they need to have. They need to be thorough in an investigation on every move that they make, but at the same time, don't jump to conclusion and assume they're guilty, like in the past it's been with law enforcement underneath Democrat leadership. And I think that's why Tom Homan is probably getting dispatched to Minneapolis to help with that messaging. Because I know the DHS officers and ICE agents that I have talked to, and, you know, over the years, you've created a friendship from those that were on the border that's been moved up north and those that were up north that came down south. You have a friendship, and they seem to be very excited about actually being able to do their job.
Yeah, this is what the quote from that Bill Malusian got. The source have told him a response to the shooting is a case study of how not to do crisis PR. The DHS is making the situation worse and the DHS is wrong and we are losing the war. We are losing the base and the narrative. I think only 24% support what the president's doing when in reality what the president's doing is getting rid of the worst of the worst, But I think that maybe some of the Border Patrol and DHS kind of losing their way, and because it's been maddening being on the ground without any local police support.
Yeah, I don't think the support is waning away from the president in this. I mean, there's some rhetoric that you get tired of every now and then, but people elected President Trump because they wanted to restore law and order and get the criminals off our streets, even if it's in blue states. And the truth is, you walk around Washington, D.C., it's safer. You walk around Memphis, it's safer. You walk around New Orleans, it is safer. You walk around St. Louis, it is safer. The places where we've had cooperation with local law enforcement and local officials, it has been very, very, very effective. I mean, my goodness, even the mayor of Washington, D.C. came out and admitted that their streets are safer. What you're seeing is a rhetoric that's coming out of Minneapolis and out of Minnesota that is inciting this type of behavior. And I think most American people can see that. That's not going to prevent DHS and ICE agents from doing their job. They have a job to deport these locals. Now, just think about this. They wouldn't even be on the streets having to arrest these individuals if local law enforcement and the sheriffs were doing their job, and then ICE would only have to go to the detention centers and pick the individuals up and deport them. That's how it works in most cities and most states, but that isn't what's happening in Minnesota. Instead, they became a sanctuary city, and instead of taking care of law and order and taxpayer citizens, they're protecting criminals. And let me tell you, I don't care if you've been here 1 year or 20 years, if you're here in this country illegally, you're a criminal. It doesn't make any difference. There's no difference between between a small crime and a large crime. You're still a criminal.
So, Senator, a different note. Looks like we moved, in the president's words, an armada into the Persian Gulf. Now it's emerging that Iran could have killed as many as 30,000 of their protesters. The Ayatollah hiding in a bunker. It's easy to lose this story, but I don't think we should. Where do you think we're heading with this? And what do you think the president's options are? Because the one fear you have, the Ayatollah goes and in comes the Revolutionary Guard, they might be worse.
Well, the Revolutionary Guard is like the SS to the Germans underneath Hitler. And so we know the Revolutionary Guard is extreme and they support the Ayatollah. Truth is, this is going to be the president's timing. Keep in mind, the Ayatollah is 86 years old. He could croak over at any given time. We made it very clear during the 12-day war, we could have taken him out at that time. If we could take him out then, I'm sure we can take him out now. But what we have to realize is, what's next? Okay, so who's the next leader of Iran? Because what we don't want is Iran to become a vacuum for ISIS or Al-Qaeda or the Taliban, or for Erdogan and Turkey to try to come in and take over the oil fields and try to, as he would say, stabilize the country, but it's really taking over the revenue. We want Iran to actually be the democracy that they used to be prior to 1979 when the Ayatollah came into place. And I've said this before. My family, my parents, they remember when Iran was as westernized as the United States. They had more women elected to office than the United States did. They had more women in the professional world than the United States did. And the Ayatollah stopped all that. And we want Iran to be able to get back that. And so if we just simply take out one leadership and we don't have a plan for someone else, it could be disastrous, like the Arab Spring underneath Hillary Clinton, that destabilized the entire region.
I know. That's a little worrisome. I'm also fascinated by what's happening in China. They fired some of their leading generals, including the most senior general, who might have they accused of leaking nuclear secrets to us. They have not had a war or any battle since 1979. And now they get rid of their senior military leadership. Now, I know you're on armed services and get briefed on things to this nature, but what could you tell our audience about what this means?
Well, we have been getting outflanked by President Xi for almost 15 years. What's taken place is President Trump has took that chessboard and knocked it over, and he has been completely running circles around China. They're in some real serious problems. He blew up the One Belt, One Road initiative by going and restructuring the trade deals we had with all these countries, which the One Belt, One Road was to economically drive all the the economy towards China because of the restructuring and the trillions of dollars now that's going to be invested inside the United States that blew that up. When you start seeing what he did with energy by taking away the ability for China to buy cheap energy on the black market, he's now caused their energy costs to go up by over 30%, which is going to greatly deprive their yen. So what you've seen is that President Xi is in a complete disarray. And what you do is you start blaming everybody around you rather than looking at yourself, which that's poor leadership. But that's what communism is all about.
And that's also make this something about the way their military is looking or not executing, that he feels he's going to take this huge risk and gutting all the senior leaders. So, you know, sadly, you know, we can't say that we haven't seen a lot of action. Our men and women have seen a lot of action. They constantly train for all different types of battle. China might have the money and armada. They have no experience doing anything.
Right. There's no country that could have pulled off what we did in Iran and what we did in Venezuela than the United States. And Russia and China both know that. Every time they think they're catching up with us, President Trump is able to show what the might of the United States is by peace through strength. And it scares the living daylights out of them.
And lastly, how are you guys doing in the ice? I heard you guys got hit pretty hard with the ice and the snow.
Well, it has been very interesting. You know, it kind of brought us to a standstill. We're digging our way out today. But it's beautiful. And I've got to spend a couple of days with my family uninterrupted. So that was nice. But we did a lot of sledding. I might have threw a few kids off of tubes. But it's, you know, it's fun until it gets where it's disrupting our economy, which today it's going to hit a little bit.
You don't like the Mullins getting bored. Then the mats come out and you guys just start wrestling each other.
We have that, too. We got some video of that. I just won't post it.
All right, good. Senator Mark Wayne Mullen, thanks so much. Stay safe.
Thank you, sir.
Bye. You got it. Finish up the top of the hour with your phone calls. 1-866-408-7669. Don't move.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
No safety deep. Oh, here he goes. He can try to beat him with his legs. As Ellis runs after him, and May got there. Drake May outraces the defender.
What a moment for him. And the season he's had has been incredible. It does remind me, I'm not saying he's not Tom Brady, okay? He's got a way long way to go to get even into discussions of other people. However, overcoming and figuring out a way to win, young Tom Brady did the same thing and became Tom Brady. We'll see how this thing develops. But what a game for New England, situationally, the whole thing.
All right, so that was a moment that was diminished because, number one, New England was away, so the crowd was really upset that Denver had just lost because Drake May scrambled for the first down to solidify the victory, 10-7. Over Denver. Both teams have a great story. I mean, they were nowhere. Denver was nowhere 2 years ago. They took over an absolute mess to Sean Payton, and he got them on the cusp, number one seed on the cusp of the Super Bowl. But they lose Bo Nix and Pete. They were done, right? And Steedham is just average at best. He doesn't even seem average. He seems below average as a backup quarterback.
They still could have won this game, despite all that.
But how do you sell Steedham in the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
Right? I think I'm saying his name right. And number two is kick the field goal. What is so bad about field goals? I would have kicked it if I were the Rams to make it a 1-point game. So this way, getting field goal range indoors, it would have made it possible to win it, especially at the 4-yard line, because you don't complete that. You still got to go get a touchdown. And number two is kick the field goal, Denver. Kick it early. It's terrible conditions. Get the points when you can.
Hey, Sal.
Hank, what's going on? We haven't worked a case in years.
I just bought my car at Carvana, and it was so easy. Too easy.
Think something's up?
You tell me. They got thousands of options.
Mm-hmm.
Found a great car at a great price.
Uh-huh.
And it got delivered the next day.
It sounds like Carvana just makes it easy to buy your car, Hank.
Yeah, you're right. Case closed.
Buy your car today on Carvana. Delivery fees may apply.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
All right, from 6 in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. I know most of you have been blanketed by the snow, and now it's turned to ice. I know you got your own challenges. If you don't have power, you can't listen. And if you do have power, I hope you do. I hope you do listen. But I also know there's nothing I can tell you from here to help your local situation. So if you don't mind, I'm going to talk about everything else going on in the world. Mark Beckman's going to be with us at the bottom of the hour. Melania Trump's brand, he's a senior advisor to her. He did a lot to do with setting up the Melania movie, and it's about to debut January 30th, and he can preview it for us exclusively just for us here on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Alex Mitchell is standing by, a feature reporter with the New York Post. Today's a big day because the California Post starts. If you love the New York Post, now California is going to get their newspaper that's going to approach news in a fair and balanced way. So Alex Mitchell, though, has been following the American Indians being used as a symbol for local schools around the country, and these political correctness are pushing back and trying to make all these intimidate all these high schools and grammar schools to get rid of it. And not anymore. This administration's not putting up with it. There's some changes to all of that, court cases back and forth. So before we get to Alex, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
And so the death toll you're hearing about, the lowest number confirmed by Reuters and others, is around 5,100. The number you heard from a human rights organization yesterday was 43,000, and Iranians in the streets are saying 70-plus thousand.
So there you go. That is the reporting from Patrick Bet-David. Iran's protests, not 2,000. How about 30,000? The Ayatollah said, do whatever you can to keep us in power, and they were just mowing people down. Are we going to allow that to happen still? Where's the Western world? Where are the protests in the streets in New York City for the people of Iran, correct? No, not interested. We'll talk about the armada that's there in the Persian Gulf, and are we going to use it?
Number two.
It has taken down five people within the seven-person governing body that essentially makes the top military decisions. Five of them. The only ones who are left, Xi Jinping himself and one other uniformed general. So it just says so much about the concentration of power.
China's massive firing of their elite generals, along with the accusation of one giving us their nuclear secrets. This is a superpower in crisis, yet Canada and some EU nations seem eager to get in economic bed with them. I can't explain it.
Number one.
And I think that President Trump is already signaling that he knows that something that is not sustainable has to be changed. And he did an interview last night with the Wall Street Journal, Josh Dossi. I think he talked to a few other people, and he's seeding the ground to say, okay, maybe we're going to make some changes here. So I think that that is more than likely going to happen.
All right, there you go. And that is Dana Perino, always insightful. Another fatal shooting in Minneapolis. And there's a national outrage as well as a wait for the investigation. That's what I think. Yes, the victim was armed. But the question is, was he about to shoot anyone? Time for Tom Homan to take over. And that's exactly what the president announced about 1 hour ago. He will take over operations, and he's going right to Minneapolis, and he's going to report directly to President Trump. That's what we need. He knows the environment. He knows. He started as a cop in the city. He's done every law enforcement position there is, retired, and then came back to work for President Trump. Was asked to seal the border, and he did. Now I hope he can fix this situation, because you can't look weak and back out. You can't do that, because then Minneapolis will have the recipe for pushing back on Trump in these blue cities. However, you have to adjust course when it's not working. And if your mission is pure and the methods are under scrutiny and overwhelming your message, you got to change gears. Well, that's one thing. The other thing that maybe not in front and center is on the mind of a lot of people is the political correctness that's pervasive throughout our society. And part of that political correctness is to salute the Native Americans, American Indians, by taking their picture off everything, taking their names and logos off schools or nicknames for teams, because it's not politically correct. Remember, they changed the Indians to Guardians, right? But they didn't touch the Braves. Well, when it comes to the Chiefs, no one's going to touch the Chiefs. But when it comes to the Chiefs, not the Kansas City Chiefs, but the Massapequa Chiefs, they decided in New York State be politically correct and push that out. Well, Massapequa was sued back. Connectquod, another town named after an Indian tribe, tried to push back, and they ultimately had a compromise and changed their name from Thunderbirds to T-Birds. And that is in violation, according to the president, of what he said. And he said there's a national mandate, leave the logos the same. Alex Mitchell's been writing these stories, getting the inside story and the inside scoop all along the way. He was a feature reporter with the New York Post. Alex, welcome back.
Brian, it's always great to be here. And pop quiz for you. In Kathy Hochul's government circle, how many people do you think have the title chief?
Oh, wow. How many?
Well, I counted from a list that was published in November. I counted 18. So that's a team of chiefs right there.
So there you go. So it's okay to be a chief, but it's not okay to be a chief if there's an Indian headdress there. So we know that Linda McMahon pushed back and allowed Mass Speaker and others to hold on to their logos. What happened in the meantime?
So last week was a real banner week for what's going on here on Long Island with the fight to keep Native American logos in schools. For starters, you have Secretary of Education Linda McMahon. She comes down on the Kennequaw district for taking a government compromise, a New York State government compromise, to go from Thunderbird to T-Bird. She said that that was a civil rights violation, doing so only because there was a connection to Native American heritage. Now, the funny thing about Kennequaw taking this compromise, T-Bird, to begin with, when New York State came around in 2023 with this idea, this mandate, this ordinance to remove Native American imagery and logos from public schools, T-Bird was not allowed. That only came back in later. Originally, that was offensive.
Yeah.
The state changes its position. The school board a few months ago votes to do it. Narrowly, they won, or the compromise won, rather. And now Secretary of Education Linda McMahon says, no, that's no good. And that wasn't the only major event that happened. 2 days before, or maybe three, the Native American Guardians Association, I spoke with their attorney, and he told me that they are ready to take their case to the Supreme Court in order to keep logos like Thunderbirds, logos like Chiefs in schools. They believe it is powerful. They believe that it represents their culture well, and they want to break this stereotype that all Native Americans are universally opposed to this. That's clearly not true. And even 2 days before that, Massapequa's school board president, Kerry Wachter, expressed interest in running for state senate because she wants to give more control to the local schools to decide what they want to do rather than having the state do a steamroll.
And what people should understand, too, is just one of these political correctness things that I just worry that if Trump or others do not, you know, if the Republican Party doesn't stay in, the Democrats are just going to just like wait it out and then force all this change because they'll deny state funding to these schools to hold out. And they think we'll break their will. But it's not just the Native American groups are fighting with the schools to keep their heritage alive. This Naga group, they're the ones bringing it to the Supreme Court, right?
Yes, they're in the Second Circuit right now. They expect to lose that. And as the attorney told me, he says this deserves a Supreme Court. It's destined for the Supreme Court. That's where they think it goes. And as far as their case, a Biden appointed judge, when he ruled against them, even admitted that the state's position may have, and this is a direct quote, may have serious constitutional defects. So they could win. There's a legitimate possibility there.
Yeah, I think so, too, because now there's even a pushback on Redskins. I mean, they're going and re-chronicling what happened when George Allen wanted to find out about the Redskins, their heritage. He had a lot to do with the name of the team. And he says he was out in the Northwest, and he was coaching there, and he got to know a lot of the Indian tribes, and he did a salute to them. And a lot of the families and other people involved say, yeah, I'd like the Redskins back. I don't think that's going to happen necessarily, but that's how much this attitude towards these names have changed.
There is an absolute culture shift, especially with the people that I've spoken with. And I did interview a Native American man, and I felt timid even saying the word Redskin. And he told me, and I'll never forget this. He said, you shouldn't be shameful about saying that. And that opened my eyes as the perspective of someone who is not Native American. And again, I think that there needs to be a little bit more of an understanding that this is not a universal position that Native Americans have in opposition. There are a lot who like it. It almost boils down to similar to any other race. If you're liberal, you're probably opposed to it. If you're conservative, you probably like it. And, you know, we have this great thing in America called democracy, which is why it should be debated at the local level rather than just a blanket ban.
And by the way, and the president's all in on this. The president's all in on the pushback, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, I believe he posed with a Massapequa Chiefs shirt in the Oval Office, or a sweatshirt, rather. I wonder who got him that.
Yeah, I think it was me, to be honest, but he wanted to do it. So the other thing is, Alex, although it was fascinating to see that Bruce Blakeman and the president are so tight, now that Bruce wants to be the next governor of New York, it doesn't look like he's going to be opposed in the primary. Tell everybody in the around the country listening who Bruce Blakeman is and why he might have a shot against Kathy Hochul if you feel that is the case, because you do the Long Island beat for the New York Post.
Yes. Well, when Bruce Blakeman was responding to her State of the State address, I saw in the room he has red hats that say "Make New York Happy Again." That is his push. He wants to bring back things that New Yorkers loved, and a lot of that, and of course, as you mentioned, President Trump is a very powerful backer for Blakeman. He wants to take things and remove cancel culture aspects. A big thing, he wants to also fight for Massapequa. He wants to fight for things like lower taxes, safety. Those are his major platforms. And the Massapequa issue is important for them both. And over the summer, before even the big ruling by the Secretary of Education, they were saying it was a top priority. They want to keep this fight. They want to have these cultural debates remain locally. And Brian, you know Massapequa just as well as I do, if not much better. I haven't seen too much pushback on the ground here where parents or taxpayers are saying we're uncomfortable with this. Certainly not getting it in Kansas City either. The only misery the Chiefs have brought is to their fans with their play this season. That was actually a quote from the Native American Guardian's lawyer when he called what New York's doing the dumbest law of all time. That's how they think about it.
I know. It's so different. So people around the country should understand. Upstate New York is like Iowa. They have a totally different view from New York City. And Long Island is also very different, very diverse. Nassau and Suffolk, you think when Suffolk, think of the Hamptons and other things like that. But it's also very, you know, there's middle class, there's working class, there's upper class places in Suffolk. So you got to wonder if there might be a pushback against Kathy Hochul. In my view, one of the most incompetent chief executives and accidental governor, if I ever saw one. Alex, great work. Look forward to you continuing to follow up with this because it matters a lot to the White House and you're all over it. Thanks, Alex. Alex Mitchell, The New York Post.
Thank you, Brian.
All right, go get him. Meanwhile, when we come back, we'll take some calls at 1-866-408-7669. And then Mark Beckman will join us at the bottom of the hour. Bring us the inside story of the making of the documentary Melania.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. Fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Kerry, wouldn't it just be easier to rename the team the Fighting Kilmeades now and just end it?
No, I don't think so. We love Brian, but no.
Right, and that, of course, was from what day was that from, Pete?
I don't know the exact date, but I was pulling some stuff to go along with the Chiefs discussion, and I couldn't let that one go. The Fighting Kilmeades. It's like, no, gotta do it.
I think there might be a shot of doing that.
It could. But, I mean, I want to see what the jerseys will look like. Well, you know, would you change the color scheme?
You know what's so interesting is my dad had a bar, right? It shows you the difference way for you alcohol in the 70s. So his logo was a drunk leprechaun sitting against a tree with a beer in his hand, like with circles going around his head like he was dreaming. And I'm thinking, that's the 70s. Like, you know, that's when you'd have Dallas, you know, and a dynasty where everyone would be drinking at lunch. You know, like, hey, come on in. Come into the boss's office, and there's a bar there.
Everyone was drinking. Yeah. Everyone.
Like, who signed off on that? But and there were kids' jerseys, too. What a great example. Fantastic. Yeah, so that kind of threw me. But, you know, coming up next, we have a look at Melania, but I do want to talk about what's happening with Minneapolis. So first off, because of the shooting, and we don't know the details of it, but the victim now had a gun, 9mm, no one denies it. The question was he about to use it? And there's a rhetoric on both sides. He was totally innocent, not true. Was he harassing the officers? Absolutely true. Did the officers act too aggressively? We're not going to know until we can hear the audio. Maybe there's some angles we haven't seen, although there were dozens of angles. But Minneapolis right away has been really a no-go zone for ICE and Border Patrol. So the president doubled and tripled down. And you know what happened? The local cops backed off. It was an explosive situation put together by an incompetent governor looking to distract from his scandal when it comes to fraud. And no one has to explain to you how bad this mayor is. So here is Rodney Scott, the former CBP commissioner. After all, Border Patrol involved in the Alex Pettit shooting that cost him his life. Cut 10.
That is taking place. That is happening. But I'll point out for the viewers, a lot of people don't understand how law enforcement is set up. Most city chiefs of police report to the mayor. So that's the boss. So the mayor is setting the tone. The mayor and the city council set the sanctuary state or sanctuary city policies in this case that chief of police has to follow. Almost everywhere we go, especially behind the scenes, the law enforcement understands that when we work together, we actually dramatically improve the safety of everybody in the community. And if the criminals or the politicians can get us to infight, it only helps the criminals. And that's it. I believe the chief wants to do the best he can. If you read between the lines of what he's saying, I get that. But he has to respond to the mayor, the city council, and in this case, even their governor is pushing the opposing side, if you will.
I know. Yeah, isn't their governor. Rodney Scott's being deferential. I'd be much happier if he was in charge of the Border Patrol. I think that right now the tempers, and it's so personal with Bovino and Kristi Noem and Waltz and Fry. I love the fact that 2 hours ago, President Trump said, Tom Homan, you take over, you report directly to me, fix what needs to be done in Minneapolis. I sense that Tom Homan's going to immediately meet with the mayor, meet with the governor, and just say, what's going on here? This is what I need you to do. If you want less than 3,000 agents here, this is where some things we have to de-escalate, and here's how you do it. If they don't want to budge on that, that means it's there to their political advantage to have those people march in the street every day. Tim Pawlenty used to be governor of that state and says, here's the problem. Cut 12.
You see in many of those videos, not just this one from the shooting, but a lot of them where protesters are, there's no perimeter established. They're being able to penetrate the operational zone of ICE officers as if they were co-located with the ICE officers. And one of the reasons a perimeter is not properly established is because of the stupid sanctuary city and county laws in our state, whereby local police departments refuse to provide any assistance to ICE, including in many cases, not all, many cases, not even helping establish a perimeter to keep the protesters at a safe distance for their own safety, and certainly not during the zone of operations for ICE. So this fact that the locals will not cooperate with the federal government and, in fact, affirmatively resist them is one of the main reasons we have so much dysfunction in this situation in Minnesota.
And the governor knows it. He's not just saying that for rhetorically. And he's not, I don't even know if he has a relationship with President Trump. He's saying, you got to provide a perimeter. You got to provide some safety. That's what was so good in New York City, that Eric Adams cut a deal. And he said, listen, you got to help us out when it comes to ICE. At least don't get in our way and provide some security and intelligence. And he did. Mamdani's not going to do that. In fact, I think they're meeting to cause Minneapolis like mayhem when ICE comes to town, and they're beginning to come. Mark Beckman next, inside the story of the making of Melania.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Everyone wants to know. So here it is. Hi, Mr. President. Congratulations.
Did you watch it?
I did not. Yeah, I will see it on the news.
That is a little of the promo of Melania that's going to be out in theaters, advertised all around. I went to the theater to watch. I'm trying to think what I. Oh, I watched the ping pong movie. I forgot the name of it. And I did Marty Supreme. Thank you, Josh. Appreciate it. And I saw the posters everywhere. Okay, let me think that here we are, ready to go. Mark Beckman joins us now. Melania Trump's exclusive senior advisor and agent and author of Some Future Day, How AI is Going to Change Everything. Mark Beckman, I know you're pumped up because the documentary is finally going to come out January 30th. First off, tell me the genesis of this.
It's been a long road to get here. I am very excited that Friday is the day, but I'm more excited to be on your show because you are hands down the hardest working individual in media. I don't know how you do it. I was watching your show last night. And I'm like, he's got to have a bed in that studio. Like, how do you keep going? You're incredible.
Thanks, man. Because last night we stayed in the city because of the snow. So I'm able to turn it right around. But Mark, I'll tell you, this is what I thought was interesting about it is because For the most part, Melania wanted to stay in the background. What about the decision to say, okay, people want to know more about me, and this is how I want to do it. Did you convince her to do it, or is this something that she wanted to do?
Yeah, good question, Brian. So thanks again for having me. Melania and I have had several conversations about creating a film for many years. And I remember the day I was sitting in Manhattan in my office and I received a phone call and she said, this is the time. We have a chance to tell a story that has never, ever been told before. The 20 days of a woman's life as she prepares to take the office of First Lady again has never been told by anyone in history of our country or any other country before. So what she did was she put together this creative vision to share, you know, again, you said a very private person, but now opening the lens a little bit during this 20-day period to show her family life, her business life, as well as her philanthropy, all as she prepares to bring her family back into the White House. She's got to set up the first lady's office in the East Wing, staff that up. But she's also putting together the biggest party in the world for America, the inauguration. So there's a lot going on in that preparation, a lot of interaction. You played it before I came on, you know, with the president and her family. One of the busiest people, you know, for sure is Melania Trump. And that's really highly seen in this film.
So one thing the president did, I think last week, is suing J.P. Morgan. I know Bank of America. He says they debanked him right after 2021. Melania was also debanked. Here she is talking about it. Cut 33.
When we left the White House, when I established my own business, as you said, the bank suddenly informed me they will not be able to do business with me anymore. Also, I had very prominent email distribution service provider just abruptly terminated my agreement. So suddenly, as well as the university, I was all agreed that they will accept my donations for the foster students. They find out that it was me. They didn't. They said we cannot go on.
So expand on that. That's pretty traumatic. And number one, she was debanked.
Yeah, it's a pretty remarkable situation. I was there with her during all three of those elements, and she talks about them in her book. It was a best-selling book. I think you covered it. I know you covered it on Fox and Friends. I think you had it on the radio show, too. But look, the world has changed a lot since then. That was a time period that was very dark. A lot of people were doing everything possible to shut down not just Melania Trump, but, you know, people who lean to the right with regards to conservative politics, with regards to individual liberty. But since then, look, we're able to stand up here with this film, a global launch that allows for us to showcase this incredible moment in time, this incredible movement for President Trump, and this great celebration for people who align with your policy and my policy.
So, you know, President Trump, to a degree, did not know he was walking into as president when he pulled up the biggest upset in history in 2017. But not many people focus on what Melania had to do. You know, even though she had the poise and presence from her modeling background and her spokesperson background, what was it like that you feel comfortable relaying for her in 2017? And can you contrast that to what it was like when she took the job again in 2024?
Well, it's a great question, because what she's doing today is transforming the office of First Lady. So I think when you look at the first term during 45, during that time period, she spent a lot of time doing the traditional First Lady activity, hosting, you know, the very important historic events, whether that's Christmas or state dinners or Easter, All of those are really important. Raising a lot of awareness to issues that require the support of the First Lady. But there's no doubt that our First Lady's on a mission right now. She's action-oriented. She wants to impact people's lives. So whereas she still continues to provide those traditional services of the First Lady, I was at the Saudi state dinner. It was magnificent. I was at the Christmas party. I'm sure you were too. First class all the way. She's driving so many achievements now that are impacting people all over the world, not just in the United States. So by way of example, quickly, Brian, if I may, she championed new legislation in the Take It Down Act, which protects American children from non-consensual intimate imagery. She championed the executive order, which was signed by the president and her in the East Room for foster care children. She launched a global coalition at the United Nations General Assembly, Fostering the Future Together, which is going to be a big group of nations. Already Korea's on board, Canada's on board, France is on board. They'll be assembling for the inaugural meeting in the White House this March, but they are all coming together to empower children through technology and education. She has participated in standing up artificial intelligence to give American children an advantage over and over. Just last Friday, she had a one-hour AI workshop for American schools, K through 12, 2,000 schools participated. She launched the Presidential AI Challenge. We have participants in all 50 states, plus Washington, D.C. and Puerto Rico, all confirmed. She put together the AI workshop at the White House with so many of the best CEOs in the country, from Tim Cook and Sam Altman, all the way through a lot of people who joined us this Saturday at the private gathering at the White House for the first film screening. So the CEO, Lisa Su of AMD, was there. Tim Cook from Apple was there. So she's really now transforming the role of First Lady into someone that's impactful, action-oriented, mission-oriented.
And what about the fact that she's in contact with Vladimir Putin, I think, or the Russian government about trying to get these stolen children back? For they went and stole the children from the Ukrainian families and went into boarding schools and took them all and put them into Russia and put them into new homes.
This is I'm happy you raised the issue. This is one of the most important things that she's done in her career on a geopolitical stage. As you're aware, President Trump and President Putin met several months ago back, I think it was in the summer, in Alaska. And she penned the famous peace letter to President Putin, which President Trump handed. And from that, a series of actions were triggered between President Putin and his office and the First Lady and her representative. And basically what that has resulted in today, Brian, is two reunifications of Ukrainian and Russian children with their families. And it's my understanding, and I have a good source, that there's a third one that is on the way. So that's an incredible accomplishment. And we will continue to see that type of action-oriented work from the First Lady.
So we know this. I don't know if it's in the movie or not. Mark, we're talking to Mark Beckman now. He's bringing us inside the making of Melania, which is going to be released January 30th. It's going to be a global release on January 30th. But when Barron walked over to President Biden the day of the inauguration of President Trump, what did he say? And did the First Lady know that Barron was going to walk over there? Because weren't they walking in together?
You have to watch the movie.
Is it in it?
You have to watch the movie.
Okay. I understand.
There are a lot of cliffhangers, Brian. There are a lot of cliffhangers in the movie. Like, you played that audio clip of the trailer, which, by the way, the First Lady creative directed that audio clip. And I'll get into it with you. She's creative directing everything. And that cliffhanger at the end, that interaction between the president and the First Lady, it opens up a whole different scene. And there are a lot of those moments where, you know, everybody, I'm sure you, including you and several members of probably everyone in your audience, people are like, what happens between the president and the First Lady when the cameras are off in the privacy of their home? And a lot of those moments where it's just a husband and a wife, but a very influential wife is interacting with the president. The president was great. He was kind enough to lend his time, and his star shines in the movie in a way that your audience and, frankly, you will love.
Well, I mean, I've seen them together maybe 10 times, and the way I was always struck by the way Melania knows exactly what's going on. She's able to say, hey, you know what? Such and such just happened today. And the respect they have for each other. You know, you can always tell couples by, are they cutting each other off? Are they like rolling their eyes? They really work extremely well together. So the bigger question is, has the president seen it? And if so, does he have a review?
So for the first time this past Saturday night, the president saw it. The first lady put together a private screening of the film for close friends and family. We had about 70 people that were all connected to the first lady. We called them the cultural iconoclasts. So we brought together an incredible room. Her family was the president, Barron, and her father, Victor. But beyond that, we had leaders from sports, from finance, from technology. We had people from the entertainment industry, the fashion industry. I'm happy to share some names if you're interested. But here's the answer to your question. The president's response was remarkable. It was really natural because we never showed him the entire film. And I'm proud to say that right there from the East Room in the White House, he stood up, grabbed the microphone at the end. It was all impromptu. He wasn't supposed to speak, and he just gushed over this film. He explained that this is a historically relevant piece. It's never been done before. And what we've done is basically authored what the First Lady has done. It's really her vision. She authored this piece that shows individuals, places, meetings, never before seen buildings during this 20-day period. So we get into so many things from, you know, the people who love her fashion, it's in there. There's a fashion explosion. But if you love geopolitics, Queen Rania was with us Saturday night at the private screening at the White House because she's in the movie. We have some geopolitical leaders. If you like the historical part of the inauguration and you're curious how the Secret Service plans to protect the first family right on the coattails of two assassination attempts, it's in there, Brian. So the president was amazing.
So this more a question to you. You knew Melania before she was first lady. So
yes.
Maybe 85% of the country had a positive view of Donald Trump, maybe 90. And of course, in light her. All of a sudden, he runs for president. You got 50% of the country who will do anything for him and 50% of the country who think it's the worst thing to ever happen. How did she handle that from being universally liked, being a figure that people can talk to and relate to all of a sudden seeing the hate and the attempted assassination, the attempted debanking, and the massive comeback that we all saw has him back in the White House? That's a roller coaster she wasn't really anticipating. What did you notice that you feel comfortable relaying to the audience?
Yeah, I'll tell you on a personal level, Brian, the First Lady is one of the most inspiring people in my life. She inspires me in so many different ways. And one of them is her ability to discern what is reality in the country. Her finger is on the pulse of the country, and she knows that there are always going to be haters. There are always going to be these complicated situations, moments of adversity. And what she does is she keeps her nose to the ground, stays focused, and maintains priorities. And her priorities always align with her business, her children, her child, her father, her husband, and then her philanthropy. And now she's First Lady, and that sits at the top. So she doesn't let these things bother her. She stays focused. She knows how to handle them, and she keeps driving through. We often talk, Brian, imagine like a point of view where like someone's walking through fire, focused on getting to the end. Bombs are exploding everywhere, and they just stay focused. And that's really how the First Lady is.
Yeah, it's so interesting. And I guess it's going to be good to see this. And we're going to find out, too, if that ballroom's going to get built. Because is it true, Mark, to build a ballroom? Did they have to wreck her office?
So she has, fortunately, multiple offices in the White House, and as well as you'll see in the film, traveling, we go through New York City, Palm Beach. So she's always working, just like you. Honestly, like you're working, I'm sure, when you're on the train, you're on a plane, you're in a car. She's the same. So the way the world works today, you can work wherever you are, and she's got that all covered.
Right. She's got it covered, and soon she'll have a ballroom, I hope. Mark Beckman, I look forward to seeing the movie. Ainsley's going to be out with you guys tomorrow on Fox and Friends. She'll be hosting the show from Washington, D.C., and then talking to the First Lady, which you, I know, helped make happen. You can follow him at Mark Beckman, MarkBeckman. Mark, thanks so much. Congratulations.
Thank you so much for having me, Brian. I really appreciate it.
You got it. Back in a moment.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
President Trump has been inviting world leaders to join his board of peace or be crushed by his council of destruction. Trump's board of peace consists of countries such as Russia and Saudi Arabia, which is like if Law and Order SVU star Diddy.
So that is the Saturday Night Live, which is, by the way, the cold open was almost Alec Baldwin in meanness and lack of humorless. Just like, hey, I didn't vote for Trump, but I really hate him even more now. That's what it was. So the one thing I liked about this guy is he would have a sense of humor. I did this, and then hit him. But they were all back to just bashing. And the whole weekend update was nonstop bashing, right? And the only other Democrat that they would bash regularly is Chuck Schumer, because they want to get rid of him. So I feel sad, because I used to look forward to SNL when political things happen. Now they're cold open. Literally is 15 minutes of mocking the Trump team. And just it's almost inventing. You know, if I'm a therapist, I'm allowing these people to say these things, and so they don't go out and beat their dog or somebody else that they love, that has nothing to do with what they're talking about. Here's an example. Here's Greenland. Cut 41.
The singing of the U.S. national anthem at an NBA game in London was interrupted by protesters yelling, "Leave Greenland alone." And you know we've gone too far when the British are like, easy on the colonizing old Trump.
President Trump has spent so much time stalking Greenland like an absolute psycho. He's basically become a guy on a dating app. He's like, hey, Greenland, you look so good. And Greenland's like, haha, thanks. And Trump's like, seriously, I need you. I'd literally give $700 billion to be with you. And Greenland's like, look, not trying to be mean, but I'm not interested. And Trump's like, I'll kill you, you ugly b-. Just off the top of my head.
Yeah, sure.
All right, there you go. See what I'm talking about? All right, go to BrianKilmeade.com. Go get tickets to History, Liberty, and Laughs streamed on Fox Nation. It's coming up February 14th in Fort Myers, Florida, and then in Reno, Nevada, May 30th. It's a patriotic show like no other. Get away from politics and have some fun. BrianKilmeade.com.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. The Brian Kilmeade Show moving your way. And this hour, we're going to be joined by Senator Tom Cotton, who's standing by. Busy day. I know a lot of you are snowed in, hemmed in by the ice and the snow. I think 50% of the country are affected. I got it. But I think whether you're experiencing it or not, you don't need me to explain it to you. And if you're not, you don't want to hear about it. Tommy Lahren, co-host of the Big Weekend Show. But so I concluded we should move on. 5 to 8. You can watch her Saturday and Sunday. She's going to be with us too. Senator Tom Cotton standing by. 7 things you can't say about China. And we're going to be talking about China. And it's getting buried with the snow. But there's a huge story breaking from our superpower nemesis. So before we get to Tom, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
And so the death toll you're hearing about, the lowest number confirmed by Reuters and others, is around 5,100. The number you heard from a human rights organization yesterday was 43,000. And Iranians in the streets are saying 70,000+.
Iran protests, not 2,000. They're saying 30 to 70,000. The Ayatollah evidently gave the order, do whatever you can to restore order. And that was mowing people down as the U.S. moves an armada into the Persian Gulf. What are the pluses and minuses of taking action? We'll ask the senator.
Number two.
It has taken down 5 people within the 7-person governing body that essentially makes the top military decisions. 5 of them. The only ones who are left, Xi Jinping himself and 1 other uniformed general. So it just says so much about the concentration of power.
Yes, what is going on in China? Massive firing of their elite generals, along with an accusation of one giving us their nuclear secrets. This is a superpower crisis, yet Canada and some EU nations seem eager to get in economic bed with them. I can't explain it.
Number one.
And I think that President Trump is already signaling that he knows that something that is not sustainable has to be changed. And he did an interview last night with the Wall Street Journal, Josh Dossi. He's apparently, I think he talked to a few other people, and he's seeding the ground to say, okay, maybe we're going to make some changes here. So I think that that is more than likely going to happen.
And he did. Tom Homan is going to Minneapolis, and he'll report directly to President Trump. And that is long overdue. Another fatal shooting in Minneapolis, and there's a national outrage as we wait for the investigation. Yes, the victim was armed, but the question is, was he about to shoot anyone? And Tom Homan got the ball, and I think it's great because I don't think Tom Homan and Kristi Noem are speaking to each other, and that's not good. One guy seals the border, the other people not communicating with him, was technically under our auspices. Tom Homan, I think, was the first one hired there. Senator Tom Cotton, welcome back.
Hey, Brian, it's good to be back on with you.
Man, so much to talk about. Your foreign policy is right up your alley, but I do want to talk about Minneapolis. For me, I'm relieved Tom Homan's going. I appreciate the mission more than anything else, but it's getting muddled with the politics, and now we got two deaths. Do you agree?
Yeah, Brian, I have high confidence in Tom Homan as well. He's a career law enforcement. He's been working on immigration matters his entire life. If I recall, President Obama's administration gave him an award even.
Yeah.
And I think it'll be good to have that kind of senior level advisor on site. The deaths of Renee Good and Alex Pretty are tragedies. They're avoidable tragedies, however, and the way they could have been avoided and the way future ones can be avoided is for state and local officials in Minnesota to start cooperating with federal authorities as opposed to obstructing them and especially encouraging civilians to interfere with lawful activities of federal law enforcement. There cannot be a mob veto on our ICE officers. It's not just what you see in the street that led to this shooting. Like last night, some of these agitators took over a hotel where ICE officers were staying. There's been reports that ICE officers have been surrounded and harassed when they're simply trying to eat a dinner off duty at a restaurant. I would point out too, Brian, that we've had several states with many more arrests of criminal illegal aliens than Minnesota, states like Georgia and Florida and Texas, and we've seen none of these things. Why? Because state and local officials are cooperating with federal law enforcement. That's what they should do in Minnesota.
I hear you. And what about an acknowledgement that these aren't all peaceful protests, at the very least, the mayor and governor? What about saying, look, I asked people to go out there with their cameras, but I don't want them jumping in law enforcement's way. I don't think it's good to harass and scream in the face of ICE agents and Border Patrol agents or FBI or whoever happens to be on the ground. None of that. But instead, you get sanctimonious clowns like the mayor there. He's the worst. Remember him with George Floyd. We first got a look at his incompetence there where he gave up a police station. Cut four.
That is not what we are talking about right now. What they are also saying is that this is simply political retaliation. They are saying this is political retribution, and it's focused here on a blue city in a blue state. That's not how America works. Other countries function that way. We don't.
So this clown thinks it's okay to harbor illegal immigrant criminals, not give access to prisons, have a sanctuary city, and try to stop ICE from doing their job, and he's lecturing us on how a country should work?
Yeah, exactly, Brian. Again, if that mayor and Tim Walz would simply cooperate with federal law enforcement, most importantly, if they would allow local police to do the job that they always do, which is assist federal law enforcement in apprehending federal fugitives or targets, then you see none of this. And as you say, they certainly should not be encouraging civilians to go out and interfere with law enforcement operations. It's one thing to stand on the sidewalk.
Right.
It's kind of obnoxious to bang pans and blow whistles when the people you're trying to alert and help are child rapists and pedophiles and career criminals. But it's especially unwise to use your car to block law enforcement vehicles or to get in between law enforcement officers and a target that they're trying to apprehend.
Senator Cotton, do you
that
think
is usually not going to end well?
Do you think that they're going to follow through with their threat, Democrats, to not fund the DHS and have another government shutdown?
Well, that's where, they got all chesty over the weekend about this, which I find very peculiar because Chuck Schumer, the senior Democrat, said they weren't going to shut down the government this time. And notably, Patty Murray, the senior Democrat who wrote these bills, said just a few days ago that a shutdown would not restrain ICE in any way. In fact, it would probably give the president more discretion. So she acknowledges, as other Democrats have acknowledged, that voting against this bill will do literally nothing to stop ICE from undertaking these lawful operations. The Democrats, for some reason, oppose. But apparently, the Democrats just desire to virtue signal to their own radical base are willing to shut down the government, knowing it will have no effect on what's happening in Minneapolis or ICE operations elsewhere. But it will, for instance, have a big impact on FEMA or TSA after one of the biggest winter storms in years. Also, our military and all of our public health agencies and the Department of Transportation and every other government agency that they'd be willing to hold up funding for, because they want a purely symbolic action that even senior Democrats admit would have no impact on what you see in Minneapolis.
All right, so you wrote the best-selling book about China, The Seven Things You Can't Say About China, and now we have some massive shakeups. China's top general, second only to President Xi, is gone. They also have the vice chairman of the Central Military Commission gone. They have another member of the commission, General Li Zuli, who leads the military's joint staff. He is gone. And General Zhang's downfall, few if any Chinese officials placed publicly under investigation are later declared innocent, as you know. And he's being investigated for sharing nuclear secrets with us. How significant is this upheaval, and what do you think it signifies?
Well, Brian, it's always hard to view inside operations and maneuvering of a Politburo. It was hard for us with Soviet Russia. It's hard for us with Communist China. I think it's fair to say, at a minimum, it shows just how tight Xi Jinping's grip is on power, that he was willing to remove the senior military general, someone who had been viewed as aligned with him, puts even more power in his own hands. This is just, again, an example of how Xi, over the last 14 years, has consolidated power. There's a reason why they call him the strongest Chinese dictator since Mao. So I think that's about as far as we can go for sure. We may know more in the coming days and weeks, but there's no question that Xi calls the shots in China.
So the thing is, they haven't had a war since 1979. They got all this hardware. They have all this investment. I understand they got this nuclear program now, all the rockets, the missiles, the silos. They got the battleships, the aircraft carriers, I imagine drone technology. But is there something about the generals that is so inept that it's become clear that their only way forward is to get rid of them? I mean, you can't say that our military is untested after what we've done, and you personally demonstrated in the infantry of what happened, all different types of warfare. China has none of that experience. What do you think they could be seeing? Or is it flat-out corruption? Or are they afraid the military is getting so big they could overwhelm the chief executive or the executive branch?
Well, on the corruption point, first off, there's no question that corruption is rife throughout the People's Liberation Army, the Chinese Communist Party, just like it was in Soviet Russia. It won't surprise your leaders to know that in the so-called vanguard of the proletariat, some are more equal than others. So there's no question that corruption is rife throughout the leadership of China. That gives, you know, someone like Xi a casual pretext at any time to remove someone that he wants. It is always possible that Xi was worried about influence or power being amassed by a rival. But again, it's hard to speculate about the inner workings of a Politburo from the outside. I just think that the upshot of where we are now is there's no question that Xi is calling the shots, and Xi is a hardcore Marxist-Leninist.
So, Iran, we have our armada, the president's words, right in the region. The Revolutionary Guard said you better not do anything. The Ayatollah's in a bunker underneath the capital city. We know that between 30, now they say 30,000 were killed, just killed in cold blood, unarmed citizens during the unrest. What's the best move forward? What are our options moving forward, Senator Cotton?
We have a lot of options. You have more than we did probably 2 weeks ago, now that we have more of this military hardware in the theater. There's also still more economic and financial options. Iran's revenues from black market oil exports have been shrinking. Now that we don't have to worry as much about black market oil coming from Venezuela, we could focus more on their black market oil, intercept some of these so-called ghost tankers, make it harder for them to get their oil to market, put even more pressure on them. Remember, the grievances of these brave protesters in Iran are at first about the fact that their currency isn't worth the paper it's written on, that will put more pressure on the currency. At root, of course, it's the same grievance they've had for decades, which is that they're governed by incompetent and malevolent dictators. Neither one of those grievances is going away anytime soon. So I think although some of these protests may have abated as the regime massacred its own people, I don't believe that's going to be the end of the story. I think it's probably closer to the early chapters of the story.
So would you worry if the Ayatollah dies, dead, killed, ousted, whatever, and now they say most logically, do you agree that the Revolutionary Guard would take over? And would that be worse?
That is certainly one possibility, and I wouldn't say it'd be worse. It's hard to get worse than the current leaders of Iran in terms of their virulent anti-American ideology, but it's not going to get better if Revolutionary Guard Corps leaders take over. Again, it's hard to say what direction it would take in the future. Not many protests become revolutions, but most revolutions start out as protests, Brian.
Lastly, in Syria, it looks like we might have abandoned the Kurds again. They've been told basically to fold themselves into the Syrian army, which is not likely. They're our most loyal fighting force in the region. Is there another way? Is there something you could do to help these people who deserve better?
Well, I know that the Trump administration is working with the new government of Syria and trying to make sure there's not a massacre or slaughter. They are trying to, of course, consolidate their control over the territory and bring some of these Kurdish forces in. I think what you saw over the last week or two was a lot of the Arabs who were aligned with the Syrian Democratic Forces peeling off and joining ranks with the government. So that leaves it more of a purely Kurdish force. But of course, we want to respect and our longstanding Kurdish friends and allies in Syria and Iraq, and ensure that they are brought into some kind of governing coalition that brings stability and order to Syria.
Yeah, I guess we'll see what happens. And we also know the last body was recovered in Israel, and it means they're going to reopen they're going to move to the second phase, I assume, and that means they're going to open up the border to Rafah. Have you been updated? Are they close to getting an international force in there and having the Israelis back out?
Well, I don't think so yet, Brian, because Hamas has not been disarmed. And the President Trump was clear about this last week at Davos. Hamas has to disarm before anything else can happen. You know, and he put them on clock for 2 or 3 weeks. And frankly, Brian, an international force is not going to go in and disarm hardened terrorists of Hamas. If anyone's going to do that, it's going to be the Israeli Defense Forces. You may have an international force come in after the fact and, you know, maybe guard static sites like food distribution warehouses or critical infrastructure. But the idea that you're going to put, you know, a bunch of soldiers from a few different countries across Africa and South Asia together, and they're going to go in and take weapons away from hardened terrorists of Hamas, I think is fanciful.
But if you're able to overthrow Iran, you cut off a huge chunk of their financing and Hezbollah's, and that would go a long way, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Go get them. Senator Tom Cotton, thanks for everything.
Thanks, Brian.
You got it. Let's hopefully avoid a government shutdown. We come back a few minutes at the back end to take some calls, and then at the bottom of the hour, we'll go to Tommy Lahren, and she's going to get ready to host Outnumbered, fresh off doing the big weekend show. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Well, it would be insanity central for our allies to think that they can benefit from any relationship with China. It's been clear for the last quarter century at least that China is a predatory power. It is a power that's determined to become the global hegemon. It is a power that does not engage in anything resembling free trade. It steals intellectual property. It sets up competing factories. It practices mercantilism, right? Beggar thy neighbor policies, sending cheap goods made by slave labor everywhere in the world. Good luck maintaining anything in the way of German industry or French industry or British industry if you're trading with China.
And that is Steve Mosher, one of this country's leading Chinese experts. And they're just looking at the fact that you have the Germans chancellor going to visit there, and then the Canadian prime minister worked out a trade deal there, allowing their electric cars to come in. It'll devastate the Canadian electric car industry. And if you think they're going to bleed across the border, forget it. The USMCA is supposed to be renegotiated this summer. Both sides say, you know, we're on track, but the minister, but Trump's ticked off. He might not want to do it. So he's saying, you know, when it comes to the prime minister there, not looking forward to it. We'll see. We'll see if we get that on track. But to think that your refuge is going to be China is crazy. But the Canadian leader is also going to Australia. I guess a middle power caucus. That's what he's looking forward to doing. But the president ticked off some people when he went overseas and just said, hey, guys, I need Greenland. I cannot believe how outraged you're getting and how anemic it looks that you send 16 people over to Greenland to defend it. 9 French, 16 or 12 Germans, few Danes. Bottom line is, President of the United States has got a pretty good deal now. I think he's going to end up with 12 bases. We're going to own the land we build on, get a shot at the rare earth, and begin to put together a strategy with NATO to keep the straits open. What I have found out by people that know the region well, the Arctic, is that one of the best things we could do is to build up our Alaskan base for the Bering Strait. That's where China and Russia have been right on our shores, breathing right down our neck. When we come back, Bill Malusian joins us, brings us the latest on the Border Patrol in Minneapolis and so much more. Don't move.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
That is why we investigate, so we can get to the truth, so there's not speculation. Speculation after 24 hours, you've got a lot of speculation in there. That office, let's think of what those agents were doing on that scene, making a split-second decision. You've had 24 hours to try and armchair quarterback things. That agent had a split seconds to make a decision.
And right, that is Greg Bovino, the Border Patrol commander in Minneapolis, on the ground in the middle of the eye of the storm. And we know about 2 deaths, 3 shootings in Minneapolis. The goal is to get illegal immigrant criminals off the street, get them out of the country and in detainment. And it's nonstop pushback from the mayor and governor. But inside the DHS, inside Border Patrol and ICE, there's some friction with leadership. Bill Malusian doing a lot of that original reporting. And he has a few minutes with us before he hops on television, joins us from Washington. Hey, Bill, when did you discover there was some problems with the way the spokespeople are speaking up about ICE and Border Patrol?
Brian, pretty much as soon as those videos started coming out, I spent kind of the 24 hours after the shooting, after all those videos started coming out, just kind of sending out calls and texts to different contacts that I have within federal immigration enforcement. And by the end of last night, I'd talked to almost 10 different officials, some of whom are in senior positions, a lot of guys who work the streets too. And across the board, everybody just expressed extreme frustration with me about some of the DHS messaging that came out of the shooting, particularly when you had Bovino and Noam going on television after all those videos circulated, calling Alex Pretty essentially a domestic terrorist who was there to, quote, massacre law enforcement or cause, quote, maximum damage. All the contacts say, yeah, it was dumb of him to show up to a protest with a gun and interject himself into a federal law enforcement operation, but there's no indication he showed up there to murder law enforcement, as these DHS officials are claiming. He never even took his gun out of his holster. So they say that kind of rhetoric just destroys credibility for the agency, and it's not the first time this sort of a thing has happened. And it makes it harder for the guys on the street, right? Because they're the ones out doing the enforcing every day. And then when you have these officials going on television telling Americans essentially, don't believe your lying eyes, this guy was a terrorist who was trying to slaughter our law enforcement, that whips up more of the public into a frenzy, and then the agents have to deal with that on the street. It's bad for PR. It's catastrophic for credibility. And some of the contacts kind of like compared it to me. You know, we spent years criticizing Democrats for claiming that the border is closed, or when they said that Haitians were being whipped at the border. Everybody knew that wasn't true. Now the shoe's on the other foot here. DHS officials have been saying that this guy essentially was a terrorist who was out there to murder law enforcement, and that's just not the case. So I've been hearing all sorts of frustration amongst both senior and street-level guys within federal law enforcement who do immigration enforcement that it's just been unacceptable, and it's really making their job harder. And you take a look at the messaging. President Trump must be hearing something because he is now sending Tom Homan to Minnesota to handle all the operations there.
And Tom Homan is not on good terms with Kristi Noem and vice versa. And this is, and he's going to report directly to the president, which I imagine was a requirement. What does Homan bring to the table?
Decades of experience. He started off his career as a Border Patrol agent. Obviously, he was doing ICE under Obama. Obama actually gave him a medal for some of the deportations he carried out there. He brings with him just decades of experience and bipartisan respect. He's also a been there, done that guy. When he's on camera, the agents who are watching him know he's been out there on the front line with those Border Patrol agents. He's been out there with those ICE guys. He's overseen these operations. He knows what he's doing. And every single, whether it's Border Patrol, CBP, ICE agent that I talk to, they love Tom Homan. They all have his respect. He's kind of like the guy. That's the enforcer. You bring him in when you want things done right. So if you've noticed, Brian, like with all this Minnesota stuff, Homan has largely been kind of like sidelined. He hasn't been on TV a whole lot. It's been all Noem and Bovino. I would expect that starts changing pretty quickly here.
Yeah, I know. I hear you. I saw that. You say some of these sources have described DHS response to the shooting as a case study in how not to do crisis PR. One said they're so fed up that they wish they could retire. Another said DHS is making the situation worse. So the thing is, too, when we see the video, the right thing to say is we're investigating, especially when you could slow it down. There's so many different angles. Do you know anything about Alex Priddy besides what he did for a living, which was an EU nurse? An ER nurse?
All I've been told is he had no criminal history prior to this incident, that he worked at the VA and that he was an ICU nurse. And all the contacts acknowledge that, it was an idiotic decision to show up there into a heated situation like that with a gun that he didn't tell law enforcement about. And then he interjects himself and, gets involved, and there's pushing and shoving. They say that was obviously a very dumb decision. He did impede and interfere with federal law enforcement, but it just doesn't match up with what some of the claims have been after the shooting from those DHS officials, that this guy was there to essentially commit a mass murder, right? I mean, at one point they said he approached agents with his gun. They made it sound like he was walking with his gun out getting ready to shoot all these agents, when the video showed that very clearly wasn't the case. So the problem is it's just a credibility issue, and we've seen this before, right? Like DHS officials in multiple previous instances have come out before there have been any facts, and they'll say something pretty inflammatory about the situation before the facts are there. I mean, you had one White House official say this guy was a would-be assassin. So the point from all these contacts we talked to is they are totally on board with mass deportations. They want to arrest and deport as many people as possible. They just have reservations about, let's be professional here. Let's wait for the facts to come out. We don't need to be saying inflammatory stuff before any investigation has started. And when you do that, it damages credibility and it makes it tougher for the guys on the ground. And it gives the Democrats and the protesters what they want. Keep in mind, Brian, with all this chaos that's been going on with these shootings, with these narratives and everything, what's not being talked about anymore? The Minnesota fraud. And Governor Tim Walz has to love that. He has to love every day that immigration is in the headlines and not the fraud scandal. So right now, the Trump administration is losing this messaging war. That's what I'm hearing from my contacts. That's what I believe as a reporter, because fraud is out of the headlines. Now every day, it's criticism about the immigration operations in Minnesota. And that is the battle the Democrats want right now.
Absolutely. And let's see if there's a government shutdown, which you're going to be talking about on television. Do you think there's going to be a government shutdown before you go?
It seems very likely. And talking to our colleague Chad Pergram, who knows this a hell of a lot better than I do, he says he doesn't see any way out of one, because the Democrats are drawing a line in the sand saying they are not going to vote for any DHS funding bill that doesn't reform ICE. Senate GOP sources are telling us they're not going to make any changes. And even if they did, Brian, it would then have to be kicked back to the House. The problem is the House isn't in session this week. They're all gone. So so that there's no House to kick it back to. And we're hearing the House has no intention to come back. So Democrats are essentially saying, yep, we're not voting for it. This is our line in the sand. And Republicans appear poised to say, okay, we'll call your bluff. You want to cause a shutdown? That's on you. So they have until Saturday to figure it out and expect a lot of fireworks on the Hill this week.
Bill, thanks so much for some quality time. We'll see you on television in about 5 minutes.
All right, thanks, Brian. Appreciate it.
Bill Malusian doing some original reporting when it comes to DHS. Doing a great job. ICE doing a great job. But I think they're in an impossible situation at this point in Minneapolis. You need someone like Tom Holman, who should have been there every step of the way, consulting for DHS, Border Patrol, ICE together. He's done all these. He's done all these jobs. Plus, he's been a local cop. So, I mean, he knows every element of this business. He retired. He was done. He's 77 years old. He doesn't need this. He came back to do this. And if you're going to ignore him, you're going to do it at your own detriment, because President Trump really respects who he is. So I look for him to meet with the mayor, meet with the governor, even though a lot of people are upset, including me, about the way they've acted, and then say, okay, meet with the police chief. Guys, you got to be able to do more for them. This is what we're going to do. We're going to be able to inform you guys ahead of time where we're going. We're going to target only the worst of the worst. We're going to gradually take some numbers out of here and slowly de-escalate the situation. That's what I think is going to happen. And then we could focus on the fraud, which, as you know, I actually think there's not going to be a shutdown, because I think if Tom Holman goes in and shows a change in strategy, that will be a good out and off ramp for Democrats to say, OK, I got something out of this personally. That's interesting. Right. Here's more from Greg Bovino. Cut three.
Sure. Many videos out there, many different accounts that you may see, that I may see, that anybody here may see. That, folks, is why we have something called an investigation, to take what you're talking about, to take those videos, to take witness statements, to take officer statements, all those minute details that will paint a true picture, and paint a larger picture of what really happened. The investigation is going to uncover all those facts, things like how many shots were fired, where were the weapons located. All those facts are going to come out in the investigation. I wasn't there wrestling that assaultive subject that was assaulting Border Patrol agents.
Couple of things. I also want to find out who is funding all these groups. Where's this money coming from to pay? How they're really formulating right now and forming a meeting in New York in order, with Linda Sarsour and others, to have protests in support of Minneapolis. And when they do get a surge of ICE agents and Border Patrol into New York City, and we know what's eventually going to happen, who's paying for all these people to intercept? Who's got the technology that's able to penetrate into DHS as well as Border Patrol's, specifically Border Patrol's ins and outs and activity? I like to find that out. You know, different. And I always point this out. The Vietnam War, civil rights, well, they weren't getting paid. They wanted to change civil rights in this country. They didn't like or did support the Vietnam War. These were protests. I'm watching this thing first. It happened with this green mania when it comes to energy. If you continue to use fossil fuels, the world's going to end. I'm going to throw paint at a Picasso. I'm going to lie in the street. I'm going to destroy G7 and G20 meetings. And then it became, well, we're going to go after anybody who supports Donald Trump, supported by idiot like the mayor here in New York, de Blasio. And then after that, you have anti-Semitism, the rage against Israel. Who scripted that? And if people want to say, well, these are people expressing outrage in a free country, where's the outrage? I just told you 30,000 people were gunned down in cold blood by revolutionaries, Islamic extremists in Iran. And these people rose up to speak out, to have a semblance of freedom. Much more understandable than what you're seeing with the Palestinians and Hamas. But not one protest against for the people that lost their lives. Do you know when family and loved ones went to pick up the bodies of their dead relative or friend or spouse? They had to pay for the bullets used to kill them. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade show, but there's no protest about that. This is all manufactured. Having said that, you got to outthink them. Got to find out what's going on with the funding. You got to investigate that, find out if it's legal, at least expose it for what it is. And at the same time, you got to be smart and tactical about everything you're doing. Can't complain the press is all left-wing reporting against us. You can't complain about bad mayors and governors. How do you beat it? How do you solve it? That's what Tom Holman will do. Don't move.
politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
So I just got this Truth Social post. Pete just put it up there for me. This just came across. Governor Tim Walz, this is from President Trump. Governor Tim Walz called me with the request to work together with respect to Minnesota. It was a very good call, and we actually seem to be on a similar wavelength. I told Governor Walz that I would have Tom Homan call him, and that was we were looking forward for any and all criminals that they have in their possession. The governor very respectfully understood that and would be speaking to him in the near future. He was happy that Tom Homan was going to Minnesota, and so am I. We have had such tremendous success in Washington, in Memphis, in New Orleans, and virtually every other place that we've touched, and even in Minnesota, crime is way down. But both Governor Walz and I want to make it better, and then he signed his name. Wow, I never thought that would happen. You know, they both said the worst things possible about each other. So now they're going to talk. But this makes sense. I mean, these people are dying. They're trying to get these ICE agents are vilified. And haven't law enforcement generally been through enough where it's now okay? We got two presidents, Bill Clinton and Obama. Obama referring to masked agents. Are you crazy? Masked agent. You know why there's masks on. Number one, most of the protesters are wearing masks. Number two is they're wearing masks because they're being doxxed, you idiot. You know better than that. If you want to say it's unfortunate, I would call for their heads to calm down. That's what former presidents do. Bill Clinton said something very similar. Just calm down. We don't need you to weigh in. I know you finished up your presidency and you weren't quite 50 years old. But since that time, you've done nothing productive. Your Netflix deal is terrible. You produced one terrible movie, I think, if that. And then you can't even finish your library. I think the Trump library is going to be done before yours. I mean, that monstrosity destroying neighborhood after neighborhood in Chicago. But on the other side, DHS, Border Patrol, does not know how to function effectively, maybe in the cities, as effective as possible without local law enforcement. And that's what's seen with some of the blowback. This is what I say. If this continues, if Governor Walz says, I'm going to work with Trump, if he puts out a statement similar, and then Trump sends Tom Homan in, and he takes Bovino, and he says, listen, Tom, we're going to send you to the next city. Gun. You just said like he did in Chicago. I believe he sent him to over to New Orleans. Told him just take a week off. All right. In light of everything, just take some, get a low your profile, you're out. So then Democrats suddenly have an off ramp. I went in there. We made a statement. We threatened to defund the Homeland Security. President Trump put Tom Homan in, met with Governor Walz. We see a de-escalation. Maybe the president comes out tomorrow and says, we're going to take 1,000 ICE agent Border Patrol out. Then you get Democrats can honestly say, wow, we were tough guys. Schumer could say, we stood up, we fought back. What do you think? I mean, I can't believe that Bill Malusian says that it's inevitable, and we thought that was coming from the two people we interviewed. But here's Matt Gorman on Meet the Press yesterday. He's a Republican, excuse me, a GOP pundit. But, you know, not necessarily Trump walks on water. Cut 17.
So we're going to go headlong to a shutdown again with Democrats. ICE funding, as you point out in several of your interviews, will not really be touched operationally because that's what's funded for the big, beautiful bill. So they will, though, in the middle of the worst snowstorm we've had in years, defund FEMA. So good luck with that. But if you were to ask me 24 hours ago, I felt we were headed towards a path of de-escalation. I think the Vance visit was helpful, the meeting with Ellison. Now, look, I still think the way out of this, both in the Senate, in Minneapolis, is one in the same. I expect still de-escalation. There'll be some performative stuff in the Senate, but some sort of agreement on detainers around, say, violent felonies and hard reset across the board. In a way, it simplifies it. The Senate way out and the Minneapolis way out is now joined and similar now.
So that's Mike Gorman weighing in. That makes sense. And look, if you could say I'm going to pull out 1,000 members of ICE or Border Patrol, you still got 2,000 there. Then say in 3 weeks we're going to pull out another 500. And you set up a program like that. And then you say an investigation done by the FBI, not by DHS. A judge today, a Trump-appointed judge, says don't destroy any evidence. I thought that goes without saying. Real quick, here's Governor Kathy Hochul of New York trying to jump in here. Cut 16.
Kristi Noem has forfeited her right to lead. And I'm calling on her to resign as Secretary of Homeland Security or Donald Trump to do the right thing and just fire her. And if not, she must be removed or impeached. And Gregory Bovino, who has helped lead and defend and escalate these operations, should also be fired.
Right. Governor Kathy Hochul has no pull. She can barely run her own state and does it terrible. But she wants to weigh in, so I'll let you hear it. So listen, I can't wait to see you in Fort Myers, Florida, on the 14th of February, and then May 30th, in Reno, Nevada, History, Liberty, and Laughs, to go on stage and salute this country on year 250 in a fun, entertaining way. Can't wait to meet you in person. Streamed on Fox Nation, BrianKilmeade.com.